Thanks for listening to the Gregor Show podcast. Are you looking for something unique? Lakewood has a large selection of special edition trucks by Chevrolet. Life is too short not to be special. Learn more at lakewoodchev.com. In the community, brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross, Alberta's leading benefit provider. Get an affordable group benefit plan for your business by calling Alberta Blue Cross today. And Courtney Mageau, who is 26 years of age, she is one of 25 finalists competing in the Search for a Champion contest. And the winner will get a $50,000 sponsorship from Champion Auto Parts for her racing team. She, of course, races in the alcohol funny cars. Courtney, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Nice. Well, I like it because now Courtney's 5'2". And I think if you walk down the street, most people probably wouldn't think, oh, there goes a car racer. So you're the youngest of four siblings. I think all you have three older sisters, and your dad has been racing cars forever. So was this just a natural progression for you? Is this something ever since you were a kid you knew you'd be racing, or did you have to come into it late?
No, actually. So I'm going to clarify this. Not just my dad, but my grandpa raced before him as well. So Perfect. Our family's been involved in racing in Edmonton for 52 years.
Nice.
As far as my progression into racing, no, it wasn't as straightforward as you think. I didn't start racing until I was 13, but by drag racing standards, you can start when you're as young as 7 years old.
Really? So, people race at seven?
7 years old. These little kids drive these.
Like in a go-kart?
Not in a go-kart. They're junior dragsters, but they essentially run on like a one-cylinder go-kart. Or sorry, a lawnmower engine.
Man, at seven, that'd be a thrill.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why did you? So you were a late bloomer at 13?
Exactly. So why did I get into it? I watched all of my sisters race before me.
Okay.
But the age gap was a little bit different. So the family had been out of junior drag racing for about 10 years when I finally put my hand up and was like, hey, you know, this is probably something that I'd be like to try. And I was waiting for it to be offered to me and suddenly realized that with some of your dreams, you have to go and chase them head on. So started racing when I was 13 and have progressed through a couple of different classes. And every time I've stopped and said, hey, it's time to progress, my dad looks at me. He's like, are you sure this is something you want to do? Yeah, I guess he was surprised that I would want to continue it and pursue it with this much fervor. But it's been a good go so far for the last 13 years.
So 13 years you're in this and you've just graduated. Now you're in the alcohol funny car. You went through your test 2 years ago, and you told me beforehand that in order to pass the test, basically you got to do six runs of the track, and there's kind of like judges, fellow people who understand to say, okay, she basically won't be a menace on the track.
Exactly. And the way that they do it is actually very interesting. You basically need to have somebody who is a peer or at a higher license in class than you to observe these passes. So it's essentially the person that you're going to be racing against who's like, you know what, I trust you. I think that you're safe, and I'd be willing to go down the track alongside you who are watching these passes and saying that essentially you're safe and qualified to do it.
So the car that you run in now, you'll go down the quarter mile track in under 7 seconds at 330 kilometers an hour. You're 5'2". You're tiny. Now, how is that for like strength wise in the car? How much of it is a strength factor in your sport?
I would say that one thing that makes drag racing so interesting is that it's completely equal opportunity. And the fact that it doesn't really matter what your stature is or your physique, you can perform at a relatively consistent level. It's actually when the car is not moving that it's the hardest to control. The reason for that is these cars are built to be completely light. It doesn't have power steering or anything else. So if you're going at a slow speed and trying to turn the corner at the end of the track, that's when the physicality plays the most into it. It's definitely hard on your body. You're accelerating at such a rapid pace, and especially slowing down, that that can be quite jarring. But as far as actually being down the track, I wouldn't say that it's not like power weightlifting or anything.
So what do you do to train? How do you become a better alcohol funny car racer?
So, I mean, the biggest thing in drag racing is reaction timing. So we have a little system set up at home and can practice as if I'm actually leaving the starting line, because the whole idea is that you need to leave the starting line before the other guy. Otherwise, he's going to get a head start. And you want to get as close to a green light as possible without false starting and leaving too early.
So now, do you do vision testing then to that to enhance your basic? Because I'm assuming you're going off of, you're timing it, of course, with the lights, but your eyes really have to be reactive with your body.
Yeah, it's a lot of hand-eye coordination. In fact, for me, it's hand and foot. So the car has a clutch pedal, so one foot's engaging the clutch, the other foot's hovering above the gas. It's hand brake in my car, so one hand is holding the brake to make sure that it's perfectly lined up on the starting line. And then as soon as that light comes on, you have to be moving both feet, releasing the brake and moving your hands to the steering wheel and getting ready to shift within the next 3 seconds.
So it's a handbrake. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a handbrake. And do you know what? When you asked about the physicality, I kind of overlooked that. But that is one of the harder parts, is trying to steer the car with one hand when you're trying to slow down at the end of the pass.
Now, you mentioned usually you think there's an advantage for being smaller in stature just because the cockpit, if we want to call it that, of the car is really tiny. But there is somebody who's 6'6 in your class. So do they get any more room in the cockpit, or is that standard and you just got to fit in regardless of your size?
So, yeah, that's Daryl Webb. He's affectionately called the Burnout King here in Edmonton. And you can modify the chassis a little bit, but these cars have a fiberglass body that surrounds them. And you can only modify that so much without really changing the nature of the vehicle. And you want them to be aerodynamic. So you can make your roll cage a little bit taller. You can lay the seat back. But for these tall guys, I can't imagine the cars are very comfortable for them.
Courtney Mageau joins us. She is in town. She is now, and you're the only, I think there's only two females in your class, and you're the only one in Alberta. And is there only like two in Canada right now in alcohol funny car?
Yep. So the other driver, Sherry Bodnarchuk, she's based out of Saskatoon. She's been racing in this class for so many years. I grew up watching her race. So it's pretty cool to be joining her ranks by being the first driver here in Alberta.
Now, I tweeted out the link where people can vote for you if they like. And I know that they helped out a local racer, Steven Rosinski, a while back for him to kind of chase his dream. And this is something that's similar for you, that it's based a little bit on voting, but also you're going to have to compete, right? So there's 50% is voting, but the other 50% comes down to your ability. When does that ability factor play into this?
So part of it is based on a judging panel. So it's going to be, my submission has been reviewed. Basically, I did a 2-minute video and had some local friends help me out with that. And that video is on the same link you can watch at, just a 2-minute video about our racing history, as well as an essay submission. And then some of the publicity, I think, probably plays into it too when the judges are looking at who would probably be the best fit for to be the face of Champion Sparkplugs.
Now, in auto racing, you know, sponsorship is massive, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people that have talent who just, if they don't get the sponsorship, they can never go there. And I know for you, getting into the Top Fuel is kind of like would that be the top level for you? Is that the peak, I guess, when it comes to funny car?
Yeah, well, there's two types of Top Fuel. There's Top Fuel Funny Car and there's Top Fuel Dragster. It's really cool right now at the NHRA professional level. There's actually four big female names who are in those classes, and they're absolutely my role models, and I would love to be joining their ranks. Those teams tend to be based in the U.S. with multi-million dollar sponsorships, so if there's anyone out there listening who has a couple mil, drop it my way, but that would be the goal in the long term.
So how do you progress to that level?
Well, those women and the men who compete in that class, a lot of them start in lower classes like I have and really start to, they show their talent and get noticed. You have to have a certain amount of business knowledge as well. I mean, it's one thing to just drive a car and show up, but to run an operation like our team does, where everything we manage, it's, we build them, we manage the crew, we attract the sponsors. It's not just about driving the car. It's a bit of an enterprise as well.
So you're kind of a motorhead a little bit. Is that safe to say? Like, you can't just, in order to run that car at that speed, I'm guessing you need to know as much about the vehicle as possible. Because if suddenly you're going down at 300 kilometers, if there's anything that feels out of whack, you got to be able to tell your crew and yourself, okay, I think this is off, or anything like that.
Absolutely. And I would never underplay the value of my crew. A lot of the guys on our team, and we have a female as well, come from a trades background and they're mechanics themselves. So, if I do come out of the car and say, hey, it made this sound, I don't necessarily know what that means. We can put our heads together and try to get it fixed. And there's usually an hour or so between passes and working that quickly to completely tear apart an engine and rebuild it in some circumstances.
Now, here in Edmonton, of course, out at the Speedway, I've been told anyway that the track is pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
You've traveled all over Canada into the Western United States. How do you rank the track here out at Castle Raceway?
I believe the Castle Raceway is like the premier drag racing facility in Western Canada. We've raced on a lot of different surfaces. And one thing that's pretty cool about our class, we often get invited to temporary pop-up events that happen on airports across Alberta. And while those are very fun, there's nothing that compares to the surface here in Edmonton. They do such a good job maintaining it that if you want to go and see some of the fastest drag racing that you'll see in Western Canada, Edmonton's the place to see it.
So what's coming up next for you? When are you racing again?
So racing season's going to kick off in June. The biggest events that we have locally here are in July. We have the Rocky Mountain Nationals, yep. July 15th to 17th. And then in August, there's a Wednesday night event, and that's called Hot August Night. Exactly. Yep. You know it.
I've been out there a few times, yes.
There you go. So those are the most exciting events to see. But there's drag racing action, and there is oval action almost every weekend at Castle Raceway. So if you check out their website, there's usually something fun going on.
So it starts in June. The off season for you then, is it just fine tuning the vehicle, or is there more so the business side of the race car that you have to focus on, sponsorships and planning out the whole year? How does that work?
We do both simultaneously. So a big part of it is at the end of the season, ripping our car completely apart down to the nitty gritty pieces and making sure that everything is in working order. A lot of the parts for safety regulations need to get sent away to get recertified. So there's a mechanical aspect too. We're essentially rebuilding it. But yeah, you're right. Things like this, doing the sponsorship stuff, that's a huge part of it. And we wouldn't be able to race without the help of our sponsors.
Got a few texters wondering, would you classify your family as a Canadian version of the Force family in the U.S. with all the sisters racing?
We get that reference a lot, especially because one of the four sisters' name is Courtney.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some parallels to be drawn.
I've had John on my show many years ago. Of course, that family's into it. And it becomes, auto racing, like in a lot of sports sometimes, it's passed down from generation. Your father, your grandfather did it. All of your sisters did it. So and you mentioned that you're kind of a late bloomer at 13, which is still really young. But to get into that now that you're in it, and you've mentioned along the way your dad asked you, are you sure this is really what you want to do? Why are you so fully committed? Why is this what you want to do?
Drag racing isn't a hobby. It's completely and 100% a lifestyle. So the amount of time that goes into it, and Edmonton, we have a very, very short summertime. So to dedicate every weekend that you have out there pursuing your passion, it's not for everybody, but we have such a strong sense of community here in Edmonton, and the drag racing community is so much fun to be around that these people are essentially my family. So going out to the track on the weekend is the same for other people as going out to the cabin or going to the lake with the adrenaline rush of a 330-kilometer-per-hour ride.
Yeah, it's quite the adrenaline rush. Not many people match that. Now, do you drive any other vehicles, or are you strictly now in the alcohol funny car?
I don't drag race anything else. I obviously have a street license as well, but it's nothing too exciting.
No, you never get into, you never go to like street legals or anything down at Castrol in another vehicle for fun?
I haven't. I'm currently rebuilding a Pontiac Solstice and turbocharging the engine, so might go down there and do some autocross and some street legals and see what I can put on that thing. But
so now when you say you're like, how heavily involved are you in building this, in rebuilding the Solstice right now?
I would like to call myself a hand.
A hand,
exactly. So I love to get my hands dirty, and I'm in there with the rest of the team whenever we're working on the funny car, or in this case, working with my dad on the Solstice. But they're the masterminds behind the operations, and I'm definitely the laborer.
the laborer. But do you find it gives you does it make you a better driver, understanding exactly how the car is supposed to function?
I think it not only makes me a better driver, I think it makes me a better teammate too. Okay. I think that you get a little more respect around the pits if you're not just standing there supervising, but if you're actually willing to help out and contribute to the overall benefit of the team.
So safe to say you don't just want to come across as kind of the pretty face of the car, that you want to be somebody who knows exactly what's going on under the hood.
Exactly. And it's a learning curve. There's I can't believe how much goes into these cars, but yeah. Hopefully one day I'll accumulate my dad's 52 years of experience and have that knowledge to pass on to my kids too.
And he's still racing, correct?
He's still racing.
But in a different class than you?
Yeah, in a higher class, actually, although we have had the opportunity to race against each other twice.
How'd that go?
Well, the first time I was in my junior dragster and he was in a smart car. And junior dragsters are faster than smart cars, folks. So there's that. The second time was actually this last summer. We were Canada's first funny like female father-daughter matchup, and he smoked my butt.
Now, when you look back on that race, was it just experience? Is it better reaction time? What was it that you say, okay, I got to learn this from dad?
In that case, it was reaction time, but it was also he has a higher horsepower vehicle. I mean, even if we were to leave from a dead start exactly the same time, 10 times out of 10, his is just a faster car.
Okay, so... So then do you want to get a more horsepower, or is that just because he's in a higher class, he automatically has more?
Hey, there's absolutely more horsepower would be the dream, but I think that my immediate goal is to be successful in the class that I'm in, get more seat time, gain experience, and then whatever comes next comes next.
So the class that you're in right now, are you limited? Is there only a certain amount of horsepower you can have?
We're not limited by horsepower. We're limited by end time, so ET. So our cars are indexed, which means that usually an event here in Edmonton, we run a 6.95 index.
Okay.
So we want to race at exactly 6.95 seconds. So going any faster than that isn't beneficial because it's going to create essentially an automatic loss if you go faster than that index time.
So you wouldn't want to go, that kind of defeat, well, you know, the natural train of thought is, hey, you're in a race car. You want to go as fast as you possibly can go. But it actually, now, why is it 6.95 is the ideal time? So if you go 6.90, let's say, for instance, you get docked points for that?
Not docked points. I mean, drag racing is elimination style, so it's two cars up against each other.
Yeah.
So if you go 6.90, it's essentially a first or worst rule. So if you go 6.90, but the other guy goes 6.87, then you, I guess, defaulted by less than him, so you still can win the event. But if the other guy goes 6.99 and he's actually slower than the index, but you've gone too fast, that's breaking out and it's a disqualification.
So how do you ensure in your, so you build your car to max out at that 6.95? Do you have it to go faster? And if it does, what goes wrong? I know it sounds so counterintuitive. What goes wrong to make you go too fast?
Drag racing it's a tuning sport. And okay. when you have an index like we do, it's a question of getting it exactly to that number. So yes, our car is built to go faster than that because we don't want to push it so hard that it's going to break parts. So it actually has more power than that built in, and we're down tuning it. So everything from adjusting the size of the jetting, so the ratio that the fuel gets mixed in with the air to create combustion, we can adjust the clutch and how that plays into it. Essentially, you want to get even the tire pressure can change how fast your car goes in the quarter mile. So it's a question of tuning it, and you need to have a great crew chief and a strong team who understands how different conditions can impact your end time.
Well, Courtney, this has been really enlightening for me. Congratulations on a successful start to your career, and best of luck in this competition. I tweeted out the link. People can go to our Facebook page. Mark will put it up there where people can go see your video and then also vote for you, and hopefully you win the $50,000 sponsorship from Champion Auto Parts, and you'll be flogging spark plugs and having a lot of fun racing.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me.
That's Courtney Majot. She is one of only a few female drivers in the alcohol funny car in Canada, and the only one in her class in Alberta. So check it out on Twitter. You can follow her on Twitter as well if you wish. She is at Girl Trouble FC. So check it out there.